जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जान वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरावन चारी। यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरावन चारी। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामा हरे रामा, रामा रामा हरे हरे। जयो राधा श्याम सुंदर राधा श्याम सुंदर राधे। जय कृष्ण बलराम कृष्ण बलराम कृष्ण बलराम जयो कृष्ण बलराम। जयो गौरानीताई 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 जय गौरानीताई। जय जय प्रभुपाद 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 जयो जयो प्रभुपाद। जय जय गुरुदेव 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 जय जय गुरुदेव। नितय गौरा हरिबोल 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 नितय गौरा हरिबोल। श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं मुदीरये। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवते उत्तमा श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। जय। ओके सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम। मे आई हैव अ कॉपी ऑफ श्रीमद् भागवतम हियर। this third canto? Yeah, this is third canto. Okay, so third canto, we have chapter 17. I think the verse is up there. I'm going to open it here. Okay. Verse number 18. Prajapatir nam tayor akarshed. Ya prak swadehad yamayor ajayata. Tam vai hiranya kashipum vidu praja. Yam tam hiranyaksham asuta sagratah. Prajapatir nam tayor akarshed. Ya prak swadehad yamayor ajayata. Tam vai hiranya kashipum vidu praja. Yam tam hiranya kshamasuta sagratah. Prabhus. Patir nam tayor akarshed. Ya prak swadehad yamayor ajayata. Tam vai hiranyakashipum vidu praja. Yam tam hiranyaksham asuta sagrata. Prajapatir nam tayor akarshed. Ya prak swadehad yamayor ajayata. Tam vai hiranyakashipum vidu praja. Yam tam hiranyaksham asuta sagrata. Matajis, ladies. Prajapatir nam tayor akarshed. Ya prak swadehad yamayor ajayata. Tam vai hiranyakashipum vidu praja. Yam tam hiranyaksham asuta sagrata. Prajapatir nam tayor akarshed. Ya prapsa dehad yamayor ajayata. Tam vai hiranyakashipum vidu praja. Yam tam hiranyakshasutasa. Prajapati Kashyap. Nama. Names. Tayoha. Of the two. Akarshit. Gave. Yaha. Who. Prak. First. Swadehat. From his body. Yamayo. Of the twins. Ajayata. Was delivered. Tam, him, why, indeed, Hiranyakashipum, Hiranyakashipu. Viduhu. No. Prajaha. People. Yam. Whom. Tam. Him. Hiranyaksham. Hiranyaksha. Asuta. Gave birth to. Sa. She. Diti. Agrataha. First. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Kashyap Prajapati, the creator of the living entities, gave his twin sons their names. The one who was born first, he named Hiranyaksha. And the one who was first conceived by Diti, he named Hiranyakashipu. Purport. There is an authoritative Vedic literature called Pind Siddhi, in which the scientific understanding of pregnancy is very nicely described. It is stated that when the male secretion enters the menstrual flux in the uterus, in two successive drops, the mother develops two embryos in her womb, and she brings forth twins in a reverse order to that in which they were first conceived. The child conceived first is born later, and the one conceived later is brought forth first. The first child conceived in the womb lives behind the second child. So when birth takes place, the second child appears first, and the first child appears second. In this case, it is understood that Hiranyaksha, the second child conceived, was delivered first, whereas Hiranyakashipu, the child who was behind him, having been conceived first, was born second. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Mukham karoti vachalam pangum langhayate girim yat kripatam ham vande shri guru dinataranam vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Okay, good morning everyone. I am very happy to be here. First of all, I would like to express my heartfelt gratitude to my spiritual master and to Srila Prabhupada and to the leadership of New Raman Reti for giving me an opportunity to speak about Srimad Bhagavatam. So this verse seems like right out of an embryology textbook because the purport that Srila Prabhupada has presented. And I was wondering how do I even make sense of this purport? Because it's a specific biological understanding. So what I'm going to do in today's class, I'm going to set up the context of the verse, what's happening in this verse, who is speaking, what's going on behind, some of the personalities that are mentioned here. Then we are going to look into the translation and specific words that are used in this translation, some points from Srila Prabhupada's purport, and then conclusion and tying it up all together. How does that sound? All right. Okay, so before we start, can anyone tell me who is speaking this verse? What's the background of this verse? Which personality is speaking this verse? Brahma, that's a good guess. Maitreya Rishi, that's correct. So this verse is spoken by Maitreya Rishi. And who's the listener of this verse? Who is it? Vidura, exactly. And what's the context? Why is Vidura in front of Maitreya Rishi? Can someone tell me what's happening? Exactly. Vidura is on a pilgrimage. So Vidura got banished from Hastinapur. Vidura was providing his wise counsel to Dhritarashtra. And he told him that your son Duryodhana is not in his right mind. He is trying to act against Dharma, do something. And when Duryodhana heard this, and this is in first canto, 13th chapter, I think. And when Duryodhana heard it, he banished. He said that who let this son of a maidservant give wise counsel to us? And Vidura, knowing and acknowledging that this is the, and Prabhupada writes in his purport there, that recognizing that this was an act of the external energy of the Lord, he accepted and he moved on. And what did he do? He went on a pilgrimage. And he meets sages across holy places. He meets different personalities, and he meets one personality in between who directs him to Maitreya. Who does Vidura meet? Uddhava, exactly. Who's Uddhava? Krishna's cousin, Uddhava. So Vidura meets Uddhava and asks him. And while Vidura is traveling in his pilgrimage, the Mahabharata war has taken place. Krishna has returned back to Dwarka. Krishna has wrapped up his pastimes from Dwarka and he has gone back. And so this is all happening while Vidura is on pilgrimage. And when he meets Uddhava, does anyone know where he meets Uddhava? Prabhas Kshetra. So he meets in the land of Prabhas. And when Uddhava, and he asks Uddhava, can you tell me what's happening? Where is the Lord? What happened after the Mahabharata war? Uddhava was so overwhelmed by the separation from Krishna that he said, I can't speak about these topics. And he directs him to Maitreya Rishi in Haridwar for the deep Shastric inquiry. Now, Maitreya Rishi is an interesting personality because, well, we'll get to Maitreya Rishi. Okay, so Vidura. So Vidura, who is Vidura? Whose son is he? Who's Vidura's father? Vyasadev. Vidura's father is Vyasadev. And his mother? That's the maidservant. And I found out in my research that her name in some texts they say is Parishrami. She was Ambalika's maid. And who is Vidura? Who was he in his actual position? Yamaraj. So why did Yamaraj come as Vidura? He was cursed. Why was he cursed? Yes, yes. So Mandavya Rishi was his name. And Prabhupada writes about it in 1st Canto, 13th chapter purports. So Mandavya Rishi, as a child, was playing with some ants. And he was impaling them with little blades of grass. So Yamaraj punished him that you were impaling little ants, so you will be impaled. And Mandavya Rishi thought that this was a disproportionate punishment. I was a child, I didn't know any better. And so he cursed Yamaraj that you will have a low birth and you will have wise counsel, but people won't take it seriously. And so that's how he got cursed. And so Vidura is Yamaraj. And then Vidura is, so Vidura is wanting to understand what is happening beyond the war of Mahabharata. Where is Krishna? And he is approaching Maitreya Rishi. So now Maitreya Rishi. Now, who is Maitreya Rishi? Does anyone know any background on Maitreya Rishi? Maitreya Rishi was a disciple of Parashar. And who is Parashar? Father of Vyasadeva. See, I like to know the verse fully and really extract out. So I'm going to keep asking and make it interactive. So I hope nobody minds it. So Maitreya Rishi is a disciple of Parashar. And so he's a contemporary of Vyasa. So Maitreya and Vyasa are friends. And Vidura is Vyasa's son. So in essentially, Vidura is going up to his uncle and asking about these questions. And Maitreya Rishi was also an advisor to Duryodhana. So Maitreya Rishi also happened to be in the assembly where he advised that you guys should make peace with the Pandavas. You guys should not engage in these things because it's not going to benefit your clan. It's going to lead to the destruction of your clan. And Duryodhana, when he was listening this, he started making fun of Maitreya Rishi. And he was silently smirking and he was scratching the ground with his foot and he was showing his prowess. And when Maitreya Rishi understood it, he cursed Duryodhana. He said that, okay, you think you can insult a sage who has come here to give you a wise counsel? This very thigh that you are touching will be broken up. And so, of course, we know in the Mahabharata later on that Bhima actually broke Duryodhana's thigh and killed him with his mace. So this is the context. So of Vidura and Maitreya, they have a shared understanding that they were both banished from the assembly of the Kurus. They both were trying to give wise counsel. They are both connected to Vyasadeva, and they end up meeting. Maitreya was also present when Krishna was about to leave the planet. Maitreya was present in front when the story with the hunter happens. And actually, Krishna tells Maitreya that there will be a time when people will come asking you for shelter and guidance. Please instruct them. And he refers specifically to Vidura. So there's a whole background and connection that's happening between as we come to this verse and this specificity. So Maitreya Rishi is a Bhagavata Rishi. He's always absorbed in Lord's Leelas. And he's chosen by the Lord to speak these truths to Vidura as part of Lord's arrangement. So we can see how Krishna, even before his departure, he's always arranging things. But he specifically arranges for Vidura to learn. So now the third canto starts with Vidura's questions, right? Can anyone tell me what kind of questions does Vidura ask? What does he ask? He asks about how did the Lord create the universe, right? He asks about how does the Lord manifest in avatars? And that's where Maitreya Rishi starts talking about Lord Varaha. And then when he starts speaking about Lord Varaha, Vidura goes, wait a minute, why did Lord Varaha come? What was the reason? Who are these personalities? So then he talks about Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasha. He talks about Kashyapa and he talks about Diti. And so that goes into the 100-year pregnancy of Diti and then, of course, how these two come. And then he asks about, why do these demoniac people disturb the universal order? Because he's coming fresh from a traumatic experience with knowing that his entire clan is going to be vanquished. So he's coming with these questions. So we know sometimes that Vidura is an advanced soul, but yet the culture of learning is present, that when he sees someone elder, someone spiritually advanced, Vidura goes and asks the questions. And then he also asks specifically, when we come to the third canto, 17th chapter, which is where we are on, he asks about that, yeah, what's happening with Hiranyaksha? Why was he killed by Varaha? And we can see that from this example, this exchange, that the great devotees are always engaged in Tushyanti cha Ramanti cha, always discussing about the Lord's pastimes and churning, and so that more stuff can come out of that churning. And that's the example here. So this chapter starts with Maitreya speaking about the demigods, that how they were in fear, because there was darkness everywhere. Now, I was envisioning that if we have darkness in Alachua for one whole day, there's no sun, there's complete darkness, what would we do? Who would we go to? Who would we go to? Would we go to the city? We would try calling them, but that won't work. Ultimately, we would come to Shyamasundar, that help us. So that's what the demigods do. When they see that the universe is engulfed in darkness, there's nothing that they can see. And so they are wondering, just think of it. We have the sun, the source of light in this universe, covered in darkness. The source of light is gone. So then these demigods are so concerned that they go up to Lord Brahma, who goes up to Lord Vishnu and makes the prayer. So that's where this chapter starts. And he explains that why is there darkness in this world? Demigods have no clue. Suddenly everything is dark. And then the Lord explains that in the womb of Diti, there are these two entities that are present, and their aura and their energy is so dark that it has covered the entire universe. Now, sometimes we may feel that if we feel low energy, sometimes it is seen on our faces. It can be felt around. When you go into a space, people have different auras and people have different energies. When I still go to my childhood home in India, there is an old energy that I feel that's there. Sometimes there are people who do paranormal hunting and ghost hunting. They find certain energies. So the living entity, the jiva, carries an aura. So we can just see the kind of aura that was carried by these two living entities. Of course, we know they are Jay Vijay, but just to perform that leela, so dark that the universe was enveloped in gloom. And this is also the setting stage for the Lord to appear and to alter the cosmic balance that was being created at that time. Okay. So we know that the Lord always likes to do dramatic things. He is crooked, right? He's Tribhanga Lalita Shyamasundar. He doesn't like to do things straightforward. He loves making convoluted arrangements and things and how things happen. And so he creates a dramatic cosmic stage, right? At Krishna's birth, there was a dramatic stage. Raining hard. We just celebrated Janmashtami. It was raining. Vasudeva is in a jail. He has to cross the ocean, cross the Yamuna, which is flooded. There's a big, massive snake behind him. And then he's going to Gokul. So Krishna doesn't like to do things straightforward. He's a simple story. He loves adding some juice to it. So before the twins, when they appeared and when the Lord appears, he creates this darkness in the universe. So that when Lord Varaha comes, we can truly see how powerful Lord Varaha is and how we can glorify. And of course, when Lord Narsingadev comes. So we know that there are 12 rasas, right? There are 12. There's 5 primary, and then there is 7 secondary. So the 5 primary rasas are Shanta, right? Neutrality, Dasya, servitorship. Sakya, friendship. Vatsalya, parental affection. Madhurya, conjugal love, right? And then there are seven secondary rasas. Rodra, anger. So when the Lord comes, he demonstrates his anger. Adbhuta, wonder. When the Lord comes from the nose of Brahma, what happened? How did he come out from a nose, nostril? Hasya, there's comedy. Veera, there's chivalry. There is daya or karuna, compassion. And then there is bhayanak, which means fear. So that's the rasa that the Lord is creating here before he comes and he can enjoy. And then the last one is bibhatsa, which is disgust or shock. So we see that all of this setting that's happening, this is all according to Lord's plan and the way he does it and the way he likes it and the way he wants to reciprocate so that everyone is satisfied. So anyway, thinking more about this aura, I was reflecting that there's a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, right? 1.18.13, I think, that Tirthi Kurvanti Tirthani Swanta Astena Gadabhrata. That just like these demoniac entities carry their auras, their darkness, we see that the Lord, the devotees of the Lord are also holy places personified, right? Because they carry the Supreme Personality of Lord Godhead within their hearts, so they turn all places into pilgrimage. Interestingly, this verse was also spoken to Yudhishthira, to Vidura, by Yudhishthira. He's glorifying. So we can see here the contrast that Yudhishthira is calling Vidura as somebody who carries Lord and carries positivity and Lord's and Lord's grace and energy through him. And then these demoniac entities carrying the darkening of the cosmos. I was also reflecting that how sometimes when there is a political leadership that is convoluted, that is dictatorial in nature sometimes, then the country can feel, the whole country can feel that, yeah, there's something not right here. So this was the setup of the situation. Okay, we'll continue moving. So now we go to the verse, right? So this verse, Vidura is asking, Maitreya is speaking, and he's talking about the pregnancy, the specificity of the pregnancy in the womb of Diti. So the translation starts with Prajapati. And who is Prajapati referring to here? Kashyapa, right? Prajapati. What does Prajapati mean? What's the meaning of word Prajapati? It's comprised of two words, Praja and Pati. Praja means beings or offsprings, right? And Pati means the Lord or the protector. So we can translate it as Lord of progeny. So Brahma. So why is he called Prajapati, right? We should look into why is Kashyapa called Prajapati. So Brahma is the creator. Brahma gets all the ingredients, creates all the worlds. And then Brahma empowers certain living entities to populate these worlds, right? So when Brahma appears from the lotus, from Garbho Dakshayi Vishnu, he is instructed. But Brahma alone cannot populate. So what he does? He creates 11 beings from his mind. They're called as Manasaputras. That means the mind-born sons. And then they descend. And when they descend, they start the process of creation. So this is almost like a cosmic division of labor that's happening here. It's not random. It's an ordered stewardship that takes place here. And so we see that nothing is random. When we say that Vedic creationism process is random, it's totally not random. There's a whole process happening. So these 10 mind-born sons of Brahma are Marichi, Atri, Angira, Pulatsya, Pulaha, Kratu, Bhrigu, Vashishta, Daksha, and Narada. Out of these, there's one called Marichi. And Marichi has a son. That son is Kashyapa. Now, there are other progenitors that are mentioned throughout the Bhagavatam. There's Daksha, there's Kardamuni, there's Prachetas. We know they married Marisha, they fathered Daksha again. The cyclical process of creation happens. And so we get to Kashyapa. He's the son of Marichi and Kala. Kala is the daughter of Kardamarishi. So now, Kashyapa has a very important role to play in all of our lives, actually. Because Kashyapa begins the creation process for a lot of people. So when Kashyapa is talking, when this verse is being spoken and this is happening, we have to understand why is Kashyapa important. So Kashyapa is literally the grandfather of all demigods, demons, humans, animals, serpents, birds, and trees. He's one of the seven great rishis. And he is entrusted with balancing creation with all kinds of divine, plant-based, and demoniac lineages. And he's also written a book on pediatrics and gynecology and child care called Kashyapa Samhita. And that's what Srila Prabhupada is kind of referencing in terms of it. So Kashyapa is very important. He's not just another sage. Kashyapa, of course, in Bhagavatam, in 6th canto, we see he marries 13 daughters of Daksha. And the point being, don't get lost in numbers. Just know that Kashyapa plays a very important role. He has 13 wives, some say 17, some say 21 wives. With Aditi, he gives birth to the demigods, the Adityas, which create the divine guardians of the cosmic order. With Diti, the one referenced here, he creates Daityas, which are related, which create the darkness and the challenges in this world. With Danu, he creates Danavas. They are demonic engineers. With Vinata, so anyway, it goes on and on. Kashyapa has a lot of background. I don't want it to become a Vedic biology lesson, but the point being, Kashyapa plays a very important role in our lives. Okay, now we come, so that's why he's called Prajapati. In Indian tradition, a lot of people talk about Gotra. Gotra means that what background do you come from? And it's most often, it is a name of a sage. Somebody say, oh, I am Kashyap Gotra, I am Bharadwaj Gotra. That means that my common ancestry goes back to Kashyapa. And it is said that you don't marry within the same ancestor because there's a common ancestor. So Kashyapa has fathered and engineered a lot of these. When we see a tree, when we see something after you go after the class, go thank a tree and thank Kashyapa. Thank you for creating this tree. Thank you so that we can offer things to Radhishyam. So Kashyapa is a very important personality. Now, we have Diti, right? This is her womb that we are talking about. So Diti is daughter of Daksha, and she's known for her impatience and slightly materialistic desire. Diti gets into a fight with Indra later on. We see that she acts against Dharma. She begs for union at dusk. When Kashyapa is saying that this is not a proper time, and he actually gives four reasons, and I'm going to come to those four reasons of why these two little rascals took birth, more than little rascals, I would say. So Kashyapa warns Diti that don't, let's not consummate our relationship at this moment. This is my time for prayers. This is dusk. There is a flow of demonic energies at this particular moment. But actions at improper times with improper motivation produce demoniac progeny. And that's what ends up happening here. A parallel to parenting today is that our shastras talk about garbhadhana samskara. Prenatal influence, there is postnatal practices, there's neonatal practices, all given in our shastra about mother stress, emotions, conception, nature. The Vedic system has already built this. So here through this example, we are learning that how that wasn't followed. And when that does not get followed, what happens is that we see these two brothers. Okay, so Kashyapa has given genetic templates to the world. Kashyapa's, actually, I was researching this and I found out that in modern science, they talk about a common ancestry for women as mitochondrial Eve. That's what they say. And for men, they call it Y-chromosomal Adam. But through our Shastra, we know that it's Kashyapa. It's Kashyapa. That's the common ancestor. That's the understanding of Gotra. So it's not a random evolution. It's deliberate, intelligent design. Okay, so now we come to these two brothers. So what does Kashyapa does here? He names the two kids. So there's embryology mentioned here, that the child that is conceived first, so that child is behind in the uterus. And then the child that is conceived later is after. So what happens when the birth happens, the one conceived after takes birth first, and the other one takes birth later. In even IVF, in vitro fertilization, they talk about that it's called dizygotic twins. I'm not a biologist, but I've studied biology back in the day. So these dizygotic twins actually follow the same process. That's what happens, the fraternal twins. So that's exactly what's given in our scriptures and our shastra, and of course that provides the supremacy of the Vedas. So now he gives names, right? They have two names. And the names are important. We have seen all across our shastra that the names of different devotees, of different personalities, reveal their personality. So Duryodhana, right? Duryodhana, somebody who's hard to fight with, somebody who has a crooked mind and cruel mind in fighting. We see that. Yudhishthira, steady in battle and truthful. So there's principle. Prahlada, the source of bliss for everyone. So we see that these names carry meanings. These names, Srila Prabhupada in one of the letters say that, when I give you this name, it means that I'm already engaging you in Krishna's service by giving you this name. So our name becomes our meditation for our service. So let's look at Hiranyaksha. So Hiranya, what does Hiranya mean? Hiranya? Gold. Hiranya means gold. Like we have heard of the word Hiranyagarbha, golden womb, or Hiranmaya Patrena. There's a verse from Ishopanishad, right? That it's made of gold. And Aksha, what does Aksha mean? Eye. It also means an axle or a center point. So the army in Mahabharata, Akshauhini, it is described that these are 18 Akshauhini, 13 Akshauhini. So Hiranya means gold and Aksha means eye. So what does it mean? When we bring the two together, what does it mean? The one who is always looking for gold. So golden-eyed, that means that he's always seeking where gold is, or one whose vision is fixed on gold. So that means that his perception is just limited to wealth, and he's always seeking wealth. And how do we get gold on this planet? How do we get gold? We mine the earth. And what does Hiranyaksha do? Takes away the earth, because he wants all the gold. He's Hiranyaksha. His eyes are always set on it. So Hiranyaksha represents the mentality of burdening the earth and taking advantage, mining and taking out oil and taking out all kinds of things. That's the mentality of Hiranyaksha that's described here. He's only sees wealth and power, and his vision is blinded by material glitter. Now, he sees earth as a jewel-bearing mine, right? So his gaze was gold-tinted, and we can see his energy. When you have certain kinds of gaze, you can tell from that, oh, I know what you're looking at or what's happening. We can see the eyes can speak the truth. So Hiranyaksha, when you look into his eyes, you know he's going for gold. Okay, who's the other brother? Hiranyakashipu. So what does Hiranya mean? Gold. And what does Kashipu mean? Soft. So how we have Kusha grass. So Kusha is the same root as Kashipu, means a bed. So one who likes to revel or lie on a golden bed. That's Hiranyakashipu. Okay, so Hiranyakashipu is always absorbed in the soft bedding. So one brother mines and extracts the gold. That represents the mentality of the one who's extracting. And then Hiranyakashipu represents the archetypal hedonist who just wants to sleep in gold and cover his spaces with gold and live in that sensual pleasure. So we can see how both of these brothers. And it is described in seventh canto, right? His palace was filled with golden pillars and jeweled furniture and jeweled dresses for his servants. And he just wanted to see wealth everywhere he wanted to go. So, and gold is also, there's also a point in Srimad Bhagavatam in first canto. What does the first canto talk about gold? Who lives in gold? Kali. Right? When he was asked to be banished by Maharaj Parikshit, when Maharaj Parikshit wanted to banish him, he said, give me some spaces where I can at least stay temporarily, where I can be in Kali Yuga. I got to do my duty. It's my service, Prabhu. So what's his Kali service? Is to create, to advance Kali Yuga and create the darkness and ignorance. So he lives in gold. So we can see how gold as a symbol, of course, when we offer it to the Lord, and it's a different understanding. But when it's disconnected from Lord's service, then gold can immediately become a way to get illusion and to greed. So now these two brothers, their names are given by Kashyapa. So again, Kashyapa is not an ordinary personality. Kashyapa has created everything. So when he gives these names, he knows what he's talking about. He knows the kinds of names he's giving them. They are not random labels. He's predicting their destiny. Even in Srimad Bhagavat, in Bhagavad Gita 16 chapter, verse 13-15, Prabhupada translates how Krishna talks about in mode of ignorance, some mode of passion, that I have so much wealth today and tomorrow I'm going to enjoy so much more. So we can see how this mentality actually is very well represented by Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Okay. Now, so we continue on. I'm going to look at time. Okay, I do have some time before we get into our question and answer. So now the embryology part of it, right? So now we go into the embryology section. So Prabhupada talks about a text called Pinda Siddhi. I was looking for this text and I couldn't find this text. But there are references to it. Pinda literally means a lump or an embryo. And Siddhi means perfection. So then he talks about that how in our Vedic literature, in our Ayurvedic Samhitas, there are references of how fertilization happens. Now this may seem a little taboo subject. Or this may seem that, why is Prabhupada talking about how twins get formed? But because our Vedic scriptures contain everything, and they literally contain everything. And so what it is pointing to me is the comprehensiveness of our Vedic scriptures that are available to us, how deep we can go into it. Right, so I'm explained that how dizygotic fraternal twins, they have the same understanding. There's 20 to 30% twin deliveries in which the elder is conceived first according to modern understanding. So we can see it by that. Third canto, Kapila Muni goes into details of childbirth and how consciousness comes in. Right, there's a whole understanding of that. So the point is that our Vedic scriptures have, and I'm going to build up to a conclusion of it. So if you feel that, oh, where is this going? The Vedic scriptures contain our samskaras. They contain how the science of things takes place. And that's why when Srila Prabhupada keeps repeating in his purports and lectures and conversation, this is a science, this is a science, this is a science. It really is a science. It really is, actually. It's not that Prabhupada was calling. He knew that this is a science and there's so much information that's given here for us. All right, so we can see how these babies that are in the womb of Diti and the kind of energy that she had an enmity against Indra. We know in the Bhagavatam, Ete Cham Sakala Pumsa, Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam, Indrari Vyakulam Loke Mridayanti Yuge Yuge. Indrari, that the Lord specifically appears to kill the enemies of Indra. So these are the enemies of Indra, the Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Diti has a problem with him. So we can see how that the kind of consciousness she is in, what she's thinking, and the two children, how they come out and how much havoc they wreak in the society. Okay. So as parents, our responsibility is to know that we carry sacred responsibility of a conscious conception using Garbhadana samskaras, conscious pregnancy, conscious naming, how the names also impact the children. So these were some of the lessons I was reflecting that come out of this. Okay, so now, as I come to towards the last part, so this verse has given something, and of course it goes on and beyond how Hiranyaksha came in childhood, what they did and what they progressed. And I was reflecting that how does it apply to the broader theme, this world. We are seeing a lot of technological advancement that's happening. AI is something that a lot of people are worried about. The other day on Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja, Amarendra Prabhu was mentioning that what happened to the society? Things are declining, and then we see, and what's going on? Excuse me. But as I think of this verse, and as I think of our civilization and the Vedic understanding and the depth that is given, I come up with the premise that the civilization is never going to advance beyond the Vedas. What the civilization is doing is it's going to catch up to the Vedic tradition, because our Vedic tradition talks about intergalactic travel. It talks about the consciousness of the being. It goes to such deeper extent of understanding our consciousness, our psyche, our minds, and how we show up in the world, that if we have any fear that the civilization will move away from the Vedas, then there is a hope that is being offered here, that civilization is just catching up to the Vedas. The Kali Yuga is actually the most degraded of it all. And we make certain technology, and I'm speaking as a technologist, as somebody who works in technology, and coming from that perspective, who uses AI on a day-to-day basis, that we are actually going towards more rediscovery of the Vedic tradition and understanding. As the AI advances, it's going to come to what the Atma paradigm, some of you may know that Prabhu who talks about it, Akhandadi Prabhu, I think, the Atma paradigm. It comes to the perspective of the living entity of the soul. Our Goswamis have talked about it. The Vedas in Mundaka Upanishad is described as Sarva Vidya Pratishtha. That means it's the foundation of all knowledge. So when something is a foundation of all knowledge, if we as devotees feel fear that where is technology going, where are things going, we just have to come back to what's given in our Vedas. And we can see that all modern discoveries are just partial rediscoveries of what is already known. Srila Prabhupada often said that the Vedas are not a question of research. Our process is descending. It's not ascending. We're not trying to understand. So we can see how the Vedas talk about embryology, the way it's given here, and in third chapter, when Kapila Muni talks about, we have seen how Surya Siddhanta and cosmology is described. We have seen Charaka and Sushrut Samhitas talking about the surgical techniques. Kashyapa Samhita goes into pediatrics that I mentioned here, which is ironic because look at how it's turned out. Ecology, cow production at Yagna. Psychology, there's understanding of linguistics, Panini's Ashtadhyayi. The reason I'm saying these things is that our Vedic tradition has more to offer. And when we present as harbingers, as somebody who is bringing out this knowledge to the world, we should be aware of the scientific understanding and not just bash it, but supplemented that, oh, you talk about that stuff? Look, this is what given in our Vedic tradition. So that way, instead of working against the scientific community, we can show that, look, we have more, and there is really more. And there's, as devotees, for us to discover so much more in a simple verse, and now we can take things out of it. And when Prabhupada establishes this entire, the idea of Bhagavad culture, this is what it really means. Yeah. Okay. So a quick conclusion as we, in the last couple of minutes for my time, we started with understanding Vidura. Who is Vidura, right? He goes on a pilgrimage. He wants to understand. He goes to see his uncle, Maitreya. Not really, but almost. Maitreya is, they were both banished by Duryodhana. They were both giving wise counsels, and they were taken away. They both meet. Krishna has already departed. Uddhava cannot speak out of his feelings of separation. And the key point there was, what energy do we bring into the world? First, there's a culture of learning. We should always glorify and understand. Even if we think we know about something, we take example from Vidura and ask. Then Maitreya, who gets direct guidance from Krishna and follows that service. We talked about Prajapatis, and how Prajapati, and specifically Kashyapa, is literally the genetic engineer for all the universe and all the things that we see. And how acts of creation can have lasting impacts. We saw the names of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, the consumerist mentality, and the mentality of extraction and enjoyment and taking the earth for my benefit. We see how that's present there. We talked about how embryology is given in Shastra, that how what is talked about here is actually verified by modern understanding through IFF and genetics, and that Vedic psychology, Vedic understanding is holistic in nature. There's nothing taboo here. Even topics such as sex, topics such as pregnancy are very easily discussed in a Shastra, because how it serves the beyond purpose and how we have to understand it through that lens, and how this is a Shastric culture and a science of life. The stage is always set by the Lord. The Lord plunges the situation. So when darkness comes up in our life, know that somehow the Lord will appear with torchlight of knowledge, as he promises in the Bhagavad Gita. Creation means responsibility, and the Vedas are completely scientific, and this is a call for us, that the Vedas are not going away, the civilization is not going away from the Vedas, it's catching up to the past, it's catching up to the Vedas. And what role can we play in this understanding as followers of Krishna Consciousness Movement, as followers of Srimad Bhagavatam, and what we can carry into the world so that the world can see what Srila Prabhupada and what our acharyas have given to us. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Questions, comments? Yes.
Thank you, Prabhu. So much information. Whoa. If Kashyapa is responsible for the demoniac civilization, why was he so hesitant to when DT approached him, if that was his role?
Why was he hesitant?
Yeah, I mean, that's his duty to create the demoniac population, just as he did with Aditi for the demigods. So why did he sort of put the blame on DT for coming at the wrong time and all this, if he is a progenitor of the demoniac civilization?
That's a great question. My understanding is that Kashyapa is also a devotee of the Lord, and Kashyapa is also somebody who follows the Shastra to the core, and who follows this understanding, and he has a manual, and he has a process of it. And it sometimes happens, and I actually was thinking about this point, that even the great devotees of the Lord sometimes get surprised by how Lord acts in a certain way. We know from the example of Parikshit that how Parikshit would never do anything wrong per se. He was a king, he was a Rajarishi, he followed, but yet somehow he puts that snake over the Rishi, Shamik Rishi, and this happens. And one can wonder, why does it happen when he is following? Because sometimes the Lord does things in a certain way that can even be beyond the understanding of ordinary living entities. Or what do you speak of great devotees? Vidura feels exasperated and frustrated When Vidura is giving his wise counsel, he knows Krishna is on the planet. He knows Krishna is coming here for a peacekeeping mission. This is Krishna. This is no ordinary messenger. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead coming as a messenger. And Duryodhana kicks him out that, oh, we don't care about you. And Vidura is banging his head that what kind of family is this? That they are disrespecting Krishna. So my understanding is that sometimes Kashyapa may have had a plan to do things certain way. He's a devotee of the Lord. But when sometimes through Lord's energy these things happen, even he gets frazzled that, oh, I just didn't expect it to happen this way. And he's also giving and teaching as an example, because through this example, he's also teaching that what is an ideal pregnancy? What is an ideal conception process? Oh, but this was not it. And of course, this is Jai Vijay and they're coming through it. So that's my understanding, that what's happening here is also a lesson for us to take from that experience. Thank you.
Yes, so I heard the whole class sitting in traffic because I don't know what they're doing out there. But so I was at the movie, you know, and I was sitting next to a feminist, you know, and she was pretty upset about how Aditi didn't look too good there. She's getting blamed for everything. So if Kashyapa wanted to create, like you were saying, wanted to create the demons, now he's blaming his wife for the whole thing, you know. So that's not such a good example, but in theory. But why couldn't he have just told him he had a headache, you know? And that way would have prevented the whole thing. It would save Vyasadeva like 3 canos worth of work, you know? I mean, people in America do that all the time. So, but I think you already answered it, you know, but it was too good. I couldn't pass it.
Thank you for sharing.
Hare Krishna. You have talked about the AI, the technology perspective. So was prescribed earlier in Vedas? No. Then I want to know the conclusion where it was already informed in Vedas what is going to happen in the Kali Yuga.
Sure. So your question is that is AI given in the Vedic scriptures? And if not, what happens in Kali Yuga?
No, yeah, what happens in the Kali Yuga? Kali Yuga, these are all going to happen in the future. That was mentioned in the Vedas.
Yes, yeah. It talks about 12th canto. There's this detailed description of what happens in Kali Yuga. I think it's the conversation between the... what's the conversation? I'm blanking out the conversation that happened there, but... the Navayogendras, I think it's in the conversation of the Navayogendras about the future. So there's a lot of description that's described as Kali Yuga progresses. And we have to see that Kali Yuga has only had 5,500 years right now. And there is 425,000 years more to go in Kali Yuga. So it's not, when we see, when sometimes we think of Kali Yuga, it's a long time. There is so much more. It's even hard for us to conceive what was the time period 400,000 years ago. And there's more of that to come. Within that, we also have the description of the golden age, that things are going to go up and then start going to go downhill. So that's the perspective. There's a lot of texts in the Vedic scriptures that talk about Kali Yuga, because Kali Yuga has happened, right? It has already happened in the past. This is not the first time we're going through Kali Yuga. It's a cyclical nature, right? Then Satya Yuga starts. So a lot of these understanding that come from different Kali Yugas that have happened. There's a purport in which Srila Prabhupada writes that even a lot of history of Kali Yuga repeats the same way in different Kali Yugas. They go through the same processes and same things that happen that we might be seeing. So it's not a new thing that we are going through Kali Yuga. What's new in this Kali Yuga is, of course, the appearance of Gaur Nithai, because that only happens rarely. So Kali Yuga is essentially the same, but we have a difference here. Now the topic of AI... I have not found anywhere where AI is given specifically. Somebody has done that research. I would love to study, or I would love to research with you if somebody's interested in it. But my understanding is that the artificial intelligence is progressing. And it is really, I work in the industry and it's disrupting every single day different things. There are things and apps that are out there, the new LLM models that have come out there, that are disrupting the way we even thought about different things. And that's going to happen. But it's almost to think that how internet came across and suddenly everyone is connected and letters were obsolete. So we see technology in that terms. And because AI does everything in a fast manner, what took me 10 years to do research, AI could do it in a shorter amount of time. So my assertion or my premise is that it's going to come faster to a conclusion also of the Vedic understanding. Because think of it, there is a processing time that is increased. There's a faster computer that is doing this work. So that was my assertion, that it will come to that point where it will start to see more of the parallels and similarities as modern research progresses with the Vedic understanding.
So this faster will create, the world will be demolished, or something will happen?
Read the 12th canto. You can read about Kali Yuga there.
So one day the world will be again, the entire Kali Yuga will be disposed, right?
425,000 years later, yes, when Lord Kalki appears, yeah.
That is, the ocean will occupy the entire world. That's
what. Yeah, yeah. Mini destruction takes place, and it's cyclical nature, right? Thank you for your question.
Thank you.
Okay, one more over there. Oh.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Prabhu, actually, I was just curious because Diti is not an ordinary soul. She's a wife of Kashyap Muni and extraordinary lady, of course, like, you know. And she realized her mistake thanks to Kashyap Muni, like, you know. So she's a very advanced lady, of course. We know her state of mind when she was pregnant. And obviously, she didn't want them to be born. And she was pregnant for almost 100 celestial years. That would be like trillions of years in our calculation. My question is that what was the state of mind of Kashyap Muni? We don't get any details in Bhagavatam, I believe. Like, you know, do you have any research? Have you found something about how, as a father, you know, he was feel, you know, because he, knowing past, present, and future, like, you know, I mean, what would be his, is there any, did you have to glean into, like, his state of mind, you know, when, you know, Aditi was pregnant with these two personalities?
Thank you for your question. Not specifically, not that, I mean, it's a great question, and to understand and to think that what Kashyap Muni felt when he knows what's about to come. I do feel that a lot of our acharyas who can see Trikala Darshi, who can see beyond past, present, and future, can really see what's going to come. One parallel that I remember is that when the Kaliya Leela happened, the Kaliya pastime, when Krishna is on the hoods, when he's covered and wrapped up in the coils of Kaliya, everyone is scared for Krishna. Everyone, except one person. Who's that one person? Everyone is crying. Who's that? Balaram. Everyone is like, oh no, Krishna, what's going to happen to you? You're our darling, and this snake, what is going on? The Brajvasis are crying. And Balaram is just smirking on the side. He's like, aha, now this is what you do. So sometimes these sages can see that, oh, of course, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu are going to come, but they are also Jay and Vijay. Kashyap Muni is aware of this. He's also aware that the Lord is also going to come. And he's also aware that the Lord is going to kill and liberate them. And of course, they go back to their position as Jay and Vijay. So any trauma that they may feel is temporary in nature. It's momentary in nature because they know that ultimately that it's all divine orchestration of Krishna's plan. So that is one understanding that I can understand through all of this that takes place. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. So my understanding is that the Srimad Bhagavatam was written by Vyasadeva because he was dissatisfied, and Narada Muni suggested, yeah, you have to write about Krishna. Like, this is the whole purpose, and you're missing the purpose. And then the Vedas were written to understand material existence and how to navigate the cycle of material existence to the best of whatever. And so in Kali Yuga, it seems like modern science, like we heard on Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja, modern science is almost pulling people even more away from God. There's more atheism, etc. And I've also heard, and you sort of mentioned today also, that in these Vedas, which I don't know all of them, obviously, understanding material life is present, and it talks about stuff that science is just finding out about now. And so I'm just curious, is there an effort, or why isn't there an effort, or should there be an effort, or et cetera, of understanding, studying the Vedas, and then presenting it to the scientific world as a path to create faith in the Bhagavatam, which is part of that group. If you can't convince a scientist about God, but you have to go through science. I'm just curious about that.
You have to visit Duck Pond in Gainesville. The BI, that's what Srila Prabhupada's purpose, to establish BI for this specific reason. And then, of course, Sitadhi Muni Prabhu here, right? He's engaged with the BI, and he has published book and research, and there is a lot of effort that is happening through this work, where we are bringing people to the understanding, but it has to be done in a manner, at least my opinion, that we don't break apart from scientific community, because if that's the established norm, then we present according to that, but really present our understanding, so that we build those bridges and understanding that it can be proceeded forward. A lot of time it may happen that we start copying Srila Prabhupada's lingo. Prabhupada could speak like that, but for us to bash the scientists without understanding, because Prabhupada had the Vedic understanding and he knew what he was talking about, but sometimes when we mimic that understanding, can pose a challenge. So it's almost better to be a little informed about what we are talking about, and then the effort that is happening through BI that we support wholeheartedly in the work that's been happening. Yeah, Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhu, for your very well-researched class. I had a question. You mentioned that Diti had brought in anger towards Lord Indra in her pregnancy. I know she was angry when her sons died at Lord Indra. So where was she angry with Indra before the pregnancy?
Yeah, it was an... I need to double-click on this point, but there was some article that I was reading where it mentioned that Diti was always harboring this. And it may be something with Daksha's story, and I can double check and let you know on that. But it was something about, because she was Daksha's daughter, there was something that happened, so she was always... And it was also about Aditi, the sister. There was a dynamic between them that she felt that, these demigods, and something was there. But I can share it with you over email or something. Yeah. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.